You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
And today, we are going to write our own Voyager episode on the fly. We have not thought about this. We have not talked about this. Char and I have not even mentioned one single word via phone or text. This is all off the cuff. I've literally not had a single thought about this episode because I want it to be a blank slate. But before we get into that, as you know, as the audience members knows, is that Char and I are not just Star Trek Voyager fans. We're big Star Trek fans. We're just Star Trek across the board. And one of my favorite iterations of Star Trek is The Next Generation, like many of you listeners. And they just released a teaser to the Season 7 gag reel that's going to be released with the Next Generation Blu-rays. And Season 7 is going to be released on December 2nd. In this preview, in this kind of teaser, the very last clip, we see Jonathan Frakes as Will Riker, and it's a single of him. And you can hear Worf on screen, and Jonathan Frakes is overacting to the extreme, just like being completely shocked about everything that's going on and happening around him.
Yeah.
And I think it's in parallels, where Worf is talking about how you can't surprise him. He knows that there's going to be a party. He knows there's going to be a surprise party.
Uh-huh. And, yeah, I think you're right.
And Riker's like, what? What are you talking about? I don't know what you mean. And just like screaming. And then all of a sudden we see a background character walk by, and then Riker turns his head real sharp and goes, Tracy! And then chases after her, and she sees him and then runs away to get away from him. And so we have definitive proof that Will Riker is indeed an ensign chaser.
Certainly in this instance, yes. Hilarious. It's a great clip.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I needed to talk about this is because anybody who's seen Star Trek Next Generation from season 4 on knows that there's this background character, usually in gold, who has a woman who has a shaved head on the sides and then spiked up on top. She's really distinct, and you see her all the time. She has to be the most noticeable background character in Next Generation. Mm-hmm. And she's my favorite because I have this whole headcanon thing where her and Picard had a relationship, but they tried to keep it under wraps.
Okay, tell me more about this.
Well, there was this episode. I can't remember if we talked about it before, and I honestly can't remember which episode it was, but she was dressed in a blue dress, and I think it was a Troy dress. And she was sitting right next to Picard during a performance. I think it might have been Data's poetry reading. I can't remember.
Okay. Possible.
They were insanely cozy, the two of them. Like, she was, like, leaning in to his shoulders. And I know I'm totally reading into this, but that was just enough for my brain to go, ooh, and then entire headcanon and plot thread that just streamed through.
Now, I have to ask this question. Have you written fan fiction?
I have yet to write fan fiction. No, I have not done that.
Now I think you have no choice but to do it, because now that you've revealed this pairing, people are going to want the fanfic.
You know what? I might leave that to you, because you're the fan fiction writer of the two of us. So I might do a story outline for you.
It's not my pairing, man. I can't. It's not my thing, man.
I'll do a script treatment, and you can do punch up. How's that?
Okay, sounds good.
She was in from season 4 to season 7 and the first 3 movies.
Oh, wow. I didn't even realize she was in all of this.
Oh, yeah, she was in all of this. Like, if you Google Ensign J-A-E, and her real name is Tracy Lee Coco, and I just think it's awesome that her last name is Coco. I just love that we have Jonathan Frakes screaming her real name.
Yeah.
it just gives me, it gives me this hope that it was just so much fun on set that, you know, like the background characters were treated just as nicely as the actors with speaking roles, and it just made me, I just see them partying all the time, just as equals.
Yeah, like, I don't know, have you seen the TNG cast at conventions ever?
Yeah, the last convention that I met, that I went to, they, I saw them as a cast and actually got to talk with Jonathan Frakes for quite a long while.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know, anybody who's ever seen them at a convention, I think you see just how comfortable they are with one another, and I think that's a reflection of the strong friendships that they really did have on screen, and I too want to think that they just had a really good time on that set all those years, and they still do to this day, and you can see it whenever you go see them at a convention. They're still having fun with one another.
I just think it's so cool to see them be so friendly after so many years, and they, you can tell that they genuinely enjoy being with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Char, I'm sending you a picture. I know this isn't good podcasting, but everybody, I want you to Google Ensign J, go to Memory Alpha, and go to this page, and you will see a photo of her in a blue dress sitting next to Picard. That is, they're touching. Their bodies are touching right now. This is not...
They are shoulder to shoulder. They really are. Okay, and now that I see her face, I recognize her very much. Yeah, she is in everything as a background. Although I gotta tear you down on the Troy dress. I think this is leftover scraps from a Troy dress that they reconfigured because they're, you know, she's very well covered, unlike Troy.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, like after seeing this picture again, I was like, yeah, that's not a Troy dress whatsoever. But okay, so you totally understand though. Like you get it. Like this is not normal captain ensign behavior. You don't just like put your arms up against another person that you're sitting to, and it's not like they're squished together because there's lots of room on either side of them.
There really is. So they are a little cozy. Wow, that is interesting.
Yeah, and so Picard is totally breaking protocol.
Yeah, so apparently Lessons was not the only episode where he got into a relationship with another subordinate. He didn't learn his lesson at all. Hey, I'm not judging. I'm just saying.
So, okay, so if the first episode that we noticed where he was dating someone under his command was called Lessons, maybe my script could be called Extra Credit.
All right, I think you're off to a really good start.
Maybe,
you got to make
maybe.
This happen.
All right, well, we should probably go into the episode. What do you think?
Oh, I suppose so. And I've been looking forward to this all week because, like you said, we've not really given any thought to this whatsoever. Zero prep time. I mean, this has probably been like the easiest podcast thus far to do, but we're going to make up for it right now by working really hard and churning out a script live. Well, live. You know what I mean. Via the podcast as it's happening, and who knows what we're going to come up with.
Yep, live to tape.
There you go. Yeah. So
how this is going to go is I may suggest something, then you might suggest something. We may have some back and forth, or, you know, like we could do the yes and thing, or we just kind of, you know, basically this is to the journey inside the writer's room. This is exactly what this is.
Yeah, I figure this is going to be fairly similar to how they actually broke stories in the writer's room for the show, just tossing ideas out and seeing what happens with them.
All right, so here we go.
Okay, you gonna kick us off?
Yeah, 3, 2, 1, write. Okay.
Oh, wait, we're not actually supposed to write. Oh.
No, we're not actually, no.
Oh, sorry.
That's what we talk about with bad podcasting, so.
We're in fine form today, aren't we?
Okay, so I think where we should start off with is what character should we focus on?
Good idea.
Because every episode has a character, is character-centric. Like, it's either a Janeway episode, or B'Elanne episode, or a Doctor episode. So, who do you think we should focus on?
Well, here's another consideration that I think we ought to throw right off the bat that might have an impact on who we feature and how we feature them. Which season do we want to use?
I think I could throw it right back on you, and that the character could determine the season. Because if we mention Kes, then it's going to be the first three seasons. If we mention Seven, it's going to be...
Okay, fair enough. I guess the two do go hand in hand.
Because I have a character in mind.
It's B'Elanne, isn't it?
No, it's not.
What?
I know, surprising.
I'm shocked.
It's someone who doesn't really get a lot of good episodes.
Is it Chakotay?
It is Chakotay.
Okay. You know what? I think after all these years, he deserves a good story. Let's give him a good story. Let's go with Chakotay.
Let's
okay.
give him a little TLC. So this is a Chakotay-centric episode.
Okay.
Now, the question is, can this be a bottle episode? Does it want to exist on the ship? Or should this be a battle episode? Should this be a romance episode? You know, like, I don't know if we need a Chakotay romance episode, because we had that with...
Yes, thank you. I want to strike that down immediately, because a lot of the Chakotay romance episodes did not work very well. They sucked. Okay. Let's be honest.
All right. Maybe there was a reason. Maybe we, even though he's a damn sexy man, maybe it just doesn't work on
screen. Yeah. And I know that Robert Beltran really wanted to have more Chakotay romance throughout the series, but I'm sorry. No, let's not do that. Let's go somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday to Robert Beltran, too. I think he turned 61 just last week.
Yeah. And we're recording this on Saturday the 22nd. I believe it was just a couple days ago.
Yeah.
So happy birthday to him.
So this is our birthday message to him. So
there we go. Okay, we'll have to tweet at him and say, hey, we wrote you a story.
Here we go. All right. Yeah. So no romance.
Do we want him to be in battle? I suppose possibly. Like, what kind? Do we want hand-to-hand combat? Do we want space battles? Or do we want a really character, just really in-depth episode? Because poor Chakotay, what they did give him was not fantastic in... Okay, I think one ground rule we've got to throw in right now. No tribal music.
No tribal music. No Akuchimoya. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, even if he brings up his people, no flute. Okay?
All right. So even though I'm a fan of that stuff, we will not put that in there. But okay, here's the thing. How about this? There was always a lot of comments about how his character progression was pretty stilted. We got to know a little bit about his background. We had some episodes where we saw him as a kid and whatnot. Let's make this an introspective episode. Let's make this a bottle episode. Let's save the producers some money.
I'm sure they'll appreciate that.
I think they will.
Okay, so special effects guys, you get the week off, for the most part.
For the most part, and yeah, so we no have a overtime. Chakotay bottle episode where it's introspective. So
idea.
Go
Sorry,
for it.
I'm cutting you off entirely. I just thought about what we could do. What about kind of like a day in the life of Chakotay episode? Because we really don't know kind of like what he does with his day when he's not on the bridge.
Day in the life. I mean, I'm not opposed to that. A day in the life, because he does have his own office. He basically runs the ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does all the duty rosters, all that fun stuff.
I don't think a lot of people understand that about the XO. I mean, like, you know, we see Janeway all over the ship, you know, like giving orders and going to engineering and making sure everything's working okay. And we see her in the transporter room and we see her in the med bay and everything like that. But it's the XO, it's the Rikers, the Kiras, the Chakotays that run the ship. They're the people that make things happen. So whatever Janeway wants, he has to make happen, no matter how unplausible. So maybe that could work, you know, but how, so if we take a day in the life, how do we make that introspective? Like, what's the conflict? What's our major conflict here? Is it, and this is, I'm just spitballing here. So is it, we say a day in the life, is he unhappy in his day in the life? Is he getting bored? Is he sad that he's no longer fighting for a cause, that he's no longer fighting for the Maquis? Do we make it Maquis-centric?
Yeah, I mean, maybe this could be an early episode where he's maybe a little too bored with what he's doing because there's just not a whole lot of action. And he's dealing with, frankly, maybe he's dealing with just some stupid bickering. You know, people are coming into his office. I don't like so-and-so. Can you change my duty shift so I don't have to work with this a-hole? You know, something like that.
Okay. Let's make this season one. This is season one Chakotay.
All right.
And he maybe this is like super early on. And this is like right after Endgame or like two episodes after Endgame. I'm sorry. I don't know why I said Endgame. Caretaker. This is like right after Caretaker. Sorry.
You had me for a moment. What? Are we time traveling? What the fuck?
We all know time is cyclical. We all know.
Yeah.
No, okay, so this is season one. This is Peppered XO era, okay? So this
is... Yes, I like that.
Yeah, and this is maybe the episode starts off with him with like Tuvok or Janeway giving him his office.
Ooh, that would be kind of nice because we never really see much of his office in the first place. Let's intro it.
Yeah, let's intro it. Like, let's see the introduction between him and his office.
Sweet.
And so we see how uncomfortable he is. He's like, I've never had an office before. You know, like this is all I've had was, you know, a down and out ship that was held together by spit and spearmint.
Yeah, we had our staff meetings in the corner room with all the debris and whatnot. I have an office? What?
Yeah, and so it could go, we don't know which way it's going to go. Is he going to go where like, hey, I'm going corporate now and this is awesome? Or is he just uncomfortable because he has way more responsibilities that is beyond fighting?
I would say it's more of the former. Like, okay, I have an office now. And it's just making him, it's like, it's unsettling him a little bit. And not so much because of the responsibility. I think he knows that he's up to the task. He knows how to manage people. Because he had to do that with the Maquis anyway. It's just, it's maybe a little different flavor, but it's still kind of the same thing. It's more like, okay, yeah, this is a little different. I'm not sure how to take this.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I like that. I got that. Like, it's, yeah, so it's, I like the whole, like, squabbling thing where, like, people will come in with their complaints.
This would be really good for season one, too, because then you could show a little bit of the Starfleet and Maquis conflict. Maybe they don't want to work together very much.
Yeah. This is before learning curve.
Way before, yeah.
Yeah, this is before learning curve when, like, it's very early on with the Maquis and Starfleet relations. And I can just see, like I could see, okay, so, like, we have that introduction and then, like, the, we see people, like, this is, like, I love this idea where it's just early on and, like, people are getting room assignments where, like, people are becoming bunk mates. And then, like, maybe there are people who are like, I don't want to room with that person. That person's a Maquis. Like, I, you know, fought them for the past year, you know, or reverse like that. And then it's Chakotay's job to kind of finalize that stuff.
Little twist, though. We don't know it right off the bat that is the actual conflict. People are going in with more, I would say, minor complaints. Like, oh, this person's a slob. I really can't stand living with this person. But then he senses a little pattern between, say, maybe a few people. Oh, these are all Maquis rooming with Starfleet, vice versa. That's what it's really about, isn't it? Maybe he's got to get them together in a meeting, or maybe he's talking with Janeway about it. What should he do? Maybe something like that.
Yeah, I think, okay, like leading up to it, where you have a little bit of a discovery and realization, I think that's good. I kind of want to see a scene where somebody, some random crewman, goes to Janeway and says, like, I have an issue, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, well, go to the XO. And he's like, and the person goes, well, they're not really the XO, right? I mean, it's just...
Yeah, make Janeway stand up for Chakotay. It's not just this honorary rank. You go to him.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of thing where she kind of slams it down and says, dismissed!
Yeah, get out! Go to Chakotay's office.
Yeah, that's the beginning of that, where we realize that Janeway's standing up for Chakotay, that it's not just an RR rank.
Yeah. Oh, I really like that, because then you would see that they are starting to trust one another. Or certainly she's trusting him and he's trusting her, because he kind of has to.
Because, yeah, he kind of has to, and he's secretly in love.
Already.
But here's the thing. I was like, so we have enough conflict to fill an episode of The Office, but not necessarily of Star Trek Voyager.
Right. So, now, is this where the B plot comes in? Well, do we have one?
We definitely could have a B plot, or this could be the B plot where it's linked to a much larger debacle.
Sure.
Where it's still a Chakotay centric episode, but he has to with Fairhaven, the A plot was just them enjoying the holodeck, and the B plot was the ship was in danger because of a shockwave.
Right. Okay. Do we want to do something like that though?
Well, I think that we need to do something with that, where it's okay. It doesn't have to be the ship is in danger, but the much more drastic plot doesn't necessarily have to be the A plot. Does that make sense? That's what I was trying to say.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So, okay, what can we do here?
I like this idea of Starfleet-Maquis relations, and I like the idea where it starts with, disgruntled people about, bunking with people or having a Maquis boss. I like, the stratification between Maquis and Starfleet. I like this idea. It needs to start small, but it needs to build up to something. Is there going to be a strike on a Federation starship?
Uh-oh, they're going to unionize and...
Well, no, I know it sounds silly, but think about it. Like, what if there was people... Like, what if there was Starfleet people? What if there was Maquis people who just refused...
To work together?
To work together. Not just, in Learning Curve, you had the Maquis who were like, yeah, I want to do things my way. That's fine. I'm going to do my job, but just back off. I don't like the structure or anything like that. What if we kind of turn that on its head a little bit, where both Starfleet, both Maquis refused to work, and it started impeding Starship function?
Okay. One argument I've got to throw out right off the bat is that a lot of people would say, well, Starfleet people aren't going to do that because they're better than that. That's not Starfleet code. Mm-hmm. And they're going to rise above it. But what if, let's just say that maybe a Starfleet officer, I don't know, in engineering or wherever, knows that a Maquis crew member that they have to work with had something to do with maybe killing a family member or something like that, that is really profoundly personally affecting that Starfleet officer, and they just can't see past it.
So it would kind of be like they wanted to use the Cardassians' knowledge in the holodeck to free B'Elanna from the alien that was attached to her neck.
Oh, sure. So, yeah, some kind of ethical thing like that where, I understand you had to do what you had to do, but you killed my father, and I can't forgive you for that. And I don't want to see your face.
Or I think it needs to be a little bit more indirect than that.
Okay.
Maybe like it's something like they were indirectly responsible for the death of somebody, or where it was the Yorktown exploded because they were trying, the Yorktown was destroyed because they were trying to rescue a Maquis vessel, and that Maquis vessel had no business being where it needed to be.
Mm. And then, as a Maquis, you could say, Starfleet is inadvertently responsible for making us the Maquis in the first place and making us fight for our homeworld because of the treaty and whatnot. And so, a little bit of just massive butting heads there.
And so we have that philosophical argument and...
Right. Everybody's right. Everybody's wrong.
Where, death is involved, but it's all indirect. Nobody's hands are clean, but nobody's hands are really dirty either.
Right. Yeah, you have to have it that way.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't work.
Because we don't need a villain on, we don't need a murderer on there, on Voyager. We have Suter for that. That's much later.
Even though we didn't know that at this time.
Yeah.
But yes, we do. So, yeah, I think that's kind of a nice, portrayal, too, of the whole Starfleet and Maquis conflict that we never really saw much of, that we needed to see. Yeah, nice and dirty and messy, and there's not going to be an easy answer.
Because we keep going back to, or at least I keep going back to, Learning Curve, and it was just the Maquis who just didn't want to follow orders. That's all it was. We didn't really, it wasn't, Starfleet versus Maquis. It was just Maquis who just didn't want to do things the Starfleet way.
Right.
And so, with this,
okay, but this is deeper. This is much more intimate, and there's much more understanding, I think, on the audience's part of, I could see why these people don't want to work together.
But how do we make this Chakotay-centric? And not just Chakotay dealing with having to be the HR representative in this fight.
Mm.
How do we make this Chakotay's personal issue?
Ooh. Should it affect him personally somehow?
So maybe he, what I'm wondering is that what if he starts to sympathize with what his, with what a Maquis is saying, and it's starting to it's starting to affect his relationship with Janeway.
Okay, how so? Are they arguing? Are they just, in a deadlock or something?
Like maybe some sort of early on deadlock where Janeway has to tell Chakotay, okay, you have to deal with this. And
mm-hmm. Ooh, and he's saying, I'm not sure if I can. I may be a little too close to this situation.
Yeah, and she's like, well, what do I need you for if you're not going to do the duties of the XO?
Right. Yeah, I might as well just have you cleaning plasma conduits, though. Here's a brush. Off you go.
And, you know, like we have that come out where he, you know, he said, like, he doesn't have to say this verbatim, but he's like, I'm a freedom fighter. I'm not a diplomat. I'm not, you know, I'm not an HR representative. You know, like, I'm not an office manager.
Okay, this would tear him up enough. And then maybe he has to reevaluate whether or not he wants to be the XO in the first place. Maybe he's just not cut out for this.
Maybe that's what it is. And that's where he has, it's not so much that he doesn't want to do it, but he feels like he can't do it.
Yeah.
And maybe he's thinking about leaving the ship, and maybe some people are going to go with him.
Ooh. Okay, that would certainly be a twist.
And what if this was after B'Elanna became the chief engineer? So this was just the mm-hmm. episode after Parallax.
Okay.
So we bring that into it. We have that. We start off, like, just to recap, we have some squabbles at the, like, we introduce Chakotay to his office and his role of XO and what that means and what we've never really seen it mean, where it's duty rosters, it's evaluations, it's dealing with squabbles and everything like that. And then we have some Maquis and Starfleet tension that he has to deal with. He's like, listen, okay, you either have to work together or you're going to lose your jobs. But then they start to explain themselves and he's like, oh, holy crap, I agree with them. And then mm-hmm. Janeway slaps him down and says, listen, if you're not going to do the job of the XO, I'm going to have to reevaluate the command structure of this ship. And then he says, he's like, maybe you should. And so B'Elanna goes and finds him in his office, his new shiny office that mm-hmm. has nothing on the walls.
Well, sure, not yet.
It's completely barren. And so B'Elanna goes and sees him, and he's like, you know, I'm thinking about leaving. If I left, would you go with me? It's like, we could go home on our own way, you know. And she's like, you were the one who stopped me at the beginning of this from arguing with the captain. You said that she was the captain, and he says, he's like, yes, and she is the captain, and I'm not going to argue with that, but if we go and find our own ship, we'll be the ones out there on our own. And she replies with something like, well, I have it good here. I'm the chief engineer of a Starfleet vessel. That was always my dream when I was a child, but then got curtailed when I had to leave. And so he starts questioning it.
And then here's the thing. Where's Chakotay going to find another ship? I mean, is he going to ask Janeway for a shuttle to leave and then, like, go find some place where he could maybe, I don't know, buy or get a ship somehow?
I think it's one of those things where, like, B'Elanna asks him that question, like, what are you going to do? We're not home. This is the Delta Quadrant. We have no friends here. We have nowhere to go. And he said, he's like, that's never stopped us before. We didn't have any friends in the Alpha Quadrant either. And he said, he's like, well,
it's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, we'll find something. We'll find a ship. We'll make one. We'll buy one, we'll steal one, you know, just whatever. Like, he's just trying to convince her to come with her. And then, of course, Seska's like, yeah, let's do this.
Of course Seska's gonna go with. Of course she is. Yeah. But then B'Elanna, I like the idea of B'Elanna bringing him back down and realizing that this is not that great of an idea. It's not very well thought out. He's doing it on impulse because he's reacting to a situation that is fixable, but it just doesn't seem like it at the time.
Right. Right. Okay, so that's, we have that. So I think we've gotten to the middle of the episode.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we're in Act 3 right now.
Okay.
And so it's like he's still not convinced, but the audience is like, is he going to leave? Is he not? Seska is kind of like the devil on a shoulder, and B'Elanna is the angel.
I like that.
Yeah,
yes.
B'Elanna is saying, don't go. And Seska's like, let's do it. You know, like, and they're like, or maybe Seska's even to the point where she says, what if we took over the ship instead?
Oh, mutiny. She would too. She really would.
And she would. She absolutely would.
That would add more buildup. Because then she's planning that idea in his head. And he's thinking, well, there are enough of us. If I can get enough of my people on my side, we could do this.
I don't know about that, because the thing is, we don't want to put any seeds of evil in Chakotay. Like, we don't want the audience to turn on him at this point.
Right, that's true. But then, okay, I mean, we kind of saw this in worst case scenario too, where, okay, if he does take over the ship, he's still got to deal with the Starfleet crew He could just theoretically throw them in the brig if he wanted to, but then you still need so many people to actually run the ship. I think the minimum is, what, 90? They said this at some point.
I think around that. So, like, what if this instead, where she proposes it, but she does it in this really diplomatic way where you couldn't really damn her, like, the way that she phrases it.
Okay.
And he says something about what you just said. He's like, listen, he's like, even if we took over the ship, we'd still be in the same situation. We'd still have to live with everybody. We'd still have to go by, like, we'd still have more Starfleet personnel on board. And also, if I ever hear you talk like that again, I will personally throw you in the brig.
I like that. Because really, Chakotay was one of the first Maquis crew members to adopt the Starfleet way. We saw that in Learning Curve.
Right.
But this is early on enough to where he could have doubts.
Right. We're showing the doubts before Learning Curve.
Sure. So that works.
I think that way we see the struggle inside of him, but it's not to the point where he wants to have a mutiny. It's just, okay, no, this is Catherine's ship and it'll always be Catherine's ship, but I don't know if I'm fit to run Catherine's ship, and so maybe I should go out and get my own.
And maybe I should just strike it out on my own. And whoever wants to come with me can come with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's definitely doable.
Okay.
All right. So, okay, do we make this sweeter by saying that there maybe is another M-class planet five light years away, and maybe there is potential where he actually could get a ship there?
To a livable planet and make a...
Oh, no, I mean, like, actually get a ship from the people living on the M-class planet where he actually really could stake it out on his own if he wanted to. He could negotiate with them. He has that opportunity.
Okay, so that's Act 4. We get to Act 3, and then, like, we have this discovery in Act 3 where it's, okay, so, like, Act 1 is the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
Act 2 is the beginning of the squabbles where he starts to realize that he might agree with everyone, and Janeway slaps him down. Act 3 is the conversation between B'Elanna and then Seska, and Act 4 is where they see that planet that you're talking about, and maybe there's a space station there on the planet. And they actually, like, maybe it's a junkyard, or it's...
it's some of Neelix's friends.
Yeah, it's a shipyard or something like that. And it's a place for them to barter. And so he takes an away team down, and, like, Janeway's like, make sure to get this, this, and this. Like, she gives him a grocery list. And then while he's there, he sees somebody trying to sell an old ship, or, like, something really small. Something really small, but fast. You know, and like Tom is there with him. And so we see him there, and we start to realize that he's taking this seriously.
Yeah, he really is considering this.
And then Tom starts to notice it, because Tom, I always felt like Tom should have been the bridge between the two worlds a little bit more, and he was never really used that way.
Right. Well, and you remember in Caretaker how Chakotay and Tom really didn't like each other very much. They just had that grit between the two of them, and then all of a sudden, after Caretaker, that just got dropped.
Yeah.
I wanted more.
Like, what if we see some sort of friction there where Tom notices Chakotay talking to the dealers and asking questions that don't regard Voyager whatsoever?
Uh-huh. And then he's kind of catching on?
Yeah, Tom's catching on. And then I don't know if I want to make Tom a tattletale. But what if somehow Tom lets it slip to Catherine?
How would we go about that without... Well, I don't know. Honestly, maybe we could make Tom look a little bit like an ass, because in season one, he kind of was.
Yeah.
Maybe he really would tattletale. Maybe we're thinking this too much through, because he's pretty raw in season one.
Or what... Okay, what about this? What if he goes to B'Elanna? Because he always secretly had a thing for B'Elanna. He goes to B'Elanna and says, like, hey, your mascot is thinking about leaving. Are you going to go with
him? Your mascot.
and she's like, what are you talking about? And then all of a sudden, like, they're talking about that. And then they turn the corner and Tuvok's there.
Oh, of course he is.
And he overheard everything with those pointy ears.
Yeah, or as you were saying that, I was thinking, well, what if B'Elanna talks to Janeway? Like, and lets her know he really is seriously thinking of this. And then we follow that up with a scene between Janeway and Chakotay, where she confronts him saying, lot is going about of you possibly wanting to leave the ship, and I'm not going to force you to do something you don't want to do, but I don't want to see you go.
I'm good with that conversation between Janeway and Chakotay. I think that's ultimately where it needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I like the idea of B'Elanna doing that. I don't.
Okay.
I think that's too much of a turncoat.
So you want Tuvok to be the tattletale?
Because Tuvok would not care. Like he has his only allegiance is to Janeway, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like he's the only one on the ship who really has the firm allegiance solely to Janeway, because Tom is in the middle, B'Elanna's to Chakotay, Neelix mm-hmm. is to himself, and the Doc is just a machine at this point.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you made a case. I mean, he would do it.
But I do like what you're saying about how it goes to Janeway, like it needs to happen that way.
Well, yeah, ultimately, those two need to have a heart-to-heart.
Yeah.
And it's got to be intense. There's got to be a lot of emotion. And I love those two when they are at odds. I like it when they fight. But this wouldn't be a fight so much as it would just be very emotional and intense.
I think it needs to be a shouting match. I think it needs to be the beginning of the sexual tension. But also,
it
needs to be a shouting match where Tuvok is standing there. What happens is that B'Elanna goes to Chakotay and says, Tuvok just overheard everything Tom just told me. And he's like, oh, crap. And then right at that moment, we hear, bloop.
Janeway to Chakotay.
Commander Chakotay, please come to my ready room. And we see Tuvok standing in the ready room with Janeway.
Yeah.
And then Tuvok leaves. And that's
Chakotay
when
gives Tuvok an awful look like, you dirty Vulcan, I hate you so much.
Exactly. And then we have that shouting match that you talked about, and we have that where, listen, I need you, Chakotay, but if you're not going to do the job, then I have no use for you. Here's a suggestion.
Yeah.
So we have that conversation where it's a shouting match, but it doesn't have an end.
Okay.
What if the same merchants who are in that scrapyard or in that whatever we develop, what if they attack Voyager because they're salesmen, but they're also thieves?
Uh-huh.
And so they want Voyager for either scraps or to sell it on the market or something like that. Or they want to raid it. They want to raid Voyager for its technology to sell mm-hmm. on the black market. And so we get to have that Chakotay badass moment where it's hand to hand and he jumps into the room like he does. And we have this moment where it's Starfleet fighting alongside with Maquis hand in hand where people save each other's lives. What do you think?
I think this is going somewhere good. I think this is where Chakotay is going to decide that he wants to stay on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
He has to choose. And he does choose Voyager, ultimately. I think, to take one little step back, he's just about to negotiate to get his own ship with these people. And then all of a sudden it's an ambush, and maybe he's using that, or maybe they're using Chakotay to stage an attack on Voyager or start raiding for parts or, you know, invade the ship, something like that. And then he realizes what's going on and has to defend Voyager.
Are we on Voyager or are we on the station?
It could be either. Like, okay, maybe we need to decide this. I think it would be kind of cooler if we're going to have more of a bottle show, we need to keep it on the sets that we have. So it's on the ship.
Okay.
So maybe they've invited a few of these people aboard, just, you know, random chat, hello, learn about each other. Or maybe they're there to talk with Neelix. And they learn about how valuable Voyager is and all this technology. And then before Neelix can open his mouth to say, well, wait a minute, guys, they're already trying to, you know, shoot people and take replicators and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. So in the midst of the negotiation for Chakotay, and he's trying to get his ship, he realizes these little jerks are trying to take over Voyager or steal stuff or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately he decides, okay, I've got to defend Voyager here, and I've got to defend the Starfleet and Maquis crews and take a stand, and ultimately it's him who saves the ship.
Okay, so that first interaction is actually on the ship, and that's when it's just like all pleasant and trading and everything like that, and then he thinks about it, like they pitch it, and then he thinks about it, has everything that we talked about, and then at the end he goes back to the merchants wherever they are, whether it's in like a cargo bay or something like that, where they're splaying out all their stuff, and they put their stuff together and it makes weapons or something, and we don't know which way Chakotay was going to decide. We don't know if he was going to go say yes to your proposition or no to your proposition. We don't know that. Mm-hmm. But then once Voyager is threatened, like, they give him the chance. They're like, you can just walk away. Like, you're going to leave with your crew. Just walk away. It's like, this doesn't matter to you. And mm-hmm. that's when he makes the decision and he punches him.
Yes. Yes. My favorite thing from Learning Curve. Just a big old punch to the face.
Yeah. Big punch to the face. And then a hand-to-hand battle ensues. And maybe like Tuvok comes in and like basically helps Chakotay like in a phaser battle or
I like
in the
that.
Cargo bay. And then that way Tuvok and Chakotay save each other's lives. So that kind of amends for Tuvok paddling.
Yes. Yes. I like that so much because we had that massive conflict earlier. This might help smooth out the edges a little bit, knowing that at least Tuvok has Chakotay's back.
Yes. Yes. And so it's a Starfleet person having a Maquis back and it's a Maquis person having a Starfleet back.
Right.
And then
trust.
And then we have that conversation. Like, maybe we don't need to have as big of a conversation between Chakotay and Janeway, but maybe it's a walking conversation where it's Janeway and Chakotay walking in the hallway saying, wow, you know, like, that's crazy that happened. Is like, she's like, do I still have my XO? And he says, until you don't need me.
Wait a minute. What do you mean by that? Until you don't need me?
That exactly. That's the thing. It's like, it has the seeds of what could happen next. And like where it's kind of a tease to the audience.
I'm not sure how much I like that.
Well, we can change the line. We can absolutely change the line. I'm not married to it.
Yeah, I feel like after you go through all this, you want, I don't want to say a happy ending, but I want it to be established that Chakotay has decided that he is comfortable and happy and secure with his decision to stay aboard.
Okay, all right. So we have Janeway ask the question, do I still have my XO? What does he say?
He says, I love you, Catherine, and I'm going nowhere.
I know that's what you want him to say, but what would the character say in
okay,
that moment?
Fanfic. I'll just save it for that. I'll save it for that. I think he says, if the position is still mine, I'm taking it.
Or something like, if you'll still have me.
Yeah. If you still want me to be your XO, I'm going to be your XO.
And then she just kind of smiles and walks away.
Yeah. End of episode.
And one more thing. And this may be cheesy.
Okay.
This may be cheesy. And tell me if it's too cheesy. But okay. he goes into his office. There's nothing on the walls. And then he puts up some sort of Native American artwork on the wall.
Cue the flute music. Okay, fine.
Yeah. And so it's this recognition. It's kind of like this moment in Deep Space Nine where Sisko put up his African art on the wall. And uh-huh. took it out of storage because it's finally a home. And so maybe that's what he did with his home.
Yeah.
And like we have a callback at the beginning where like we realize there's nothing on the walls. And like Neelix says, you know, when are you going to decorate it or something like that? Or I don't know. Like somebody says, maybe you can put up something.
I don't even think anybody needs to say anything. He just does it.
Oh, I like that. I like that better. And
yeah,
then,
okay.
Bam, roll credits.
Yeah. It's a little cheesy, but it gets the point across, and it's a beautiful little bookend, and so I think we got to roll with that. That's perfect. That's a great way to end.
All right, we have our episode, but
boom.
What do we call it? What's the name of the episode?
Oh, what's the title?
I'm going to say something simple, something that like Star Trek would absolutely call this episode, because it's so simplistic, no puns, no nothing, because it's not Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
It would be Decisions.
It's very straightforward. But I could see that happening.
What would you call it? What would you call it?
I'm thinking here. Voyager is very well known for its one-word episode titles, more often than not. One of these days, I'm going to compile the list of episodes and see just what huge percentage have one word for an episode title. So I'm going to go with something like that, too, where it's just one word.
Okay.
I'm going to call it Dissonance.
Dissidence?
Dissonance.
Dissonance.
Yes, Dissonance.
Okay. Now, for people who may not know the meaning of that word, people not like me, what would that mean? What does that word
mean? Okay, I'm going to call up Webster here. Dissonance is a noun, a lack of agreement or inconsistency between the beliefs one holds or between one's actions and one's beliefs.
Okay, that's very similar to Decisions, but it's very different
right.
at the same time. Okay, all right, well, there you have it, folks. That's our episode, and that's our proposed titles. What we would like from you, the listeners, is we want you to go to trek.fm/TTJ and find the poll there waiting for you, where it'll say, which one do you like more, Tristan's pick, Decisions, Char's pick, Dissonance, or one pick of your own.
Yeah.
Please.
We want to hear from you. Yeah. And then next week, we will let you know what the winner is.
And also, please go to trek.fm/contact and send us a message. Let us know what you thought of this episode. Was there anything that was a little implausible? Did we not treat the characters in the way that you think they should have been treated or how they would have acted in the situation? Please let us know. We did not talk about this beforehand. This
not at all.
Straight from the hip. So please talk to us. Let us know what you think. You can also find me on Twitter at the Insane Robin Char. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Oh the Profanity.
And also, one thing that you could do is you could mention it in a review. You could go to iTunes and submit a review, or you could go to Stitcher, wherever you listen. And if you give us a 5-star rating, we'll mention you on the podcast.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we do have a review that's new this week. And so I'm going to probably not say this name correctly, so please forgive me, whoever you are out there. The person's name is spelled J-E-N-N-E-A-N-Y. Jenny-Annie, maybe?
Jenny, or I don't know.
I'm not sure. But whoever this person is lovely because they gave us 5 stars in the iTunes store, in the U.S. iTunes store, and wrote us a review and complimented us on how we go about discussing Voyager, saying we love it. Despite its flaws, maybe in spite of its flaws, but we have a genuine appreciation for Voyager, and we do. I feel like we really do. Yeah. And so if that's coming through, that is really wonderful to hear, because we're here to talk about Voyager honestly, but with a little bit of an endearment, too. I mean, Voyager is certainly a nostalgic favorite over some of the other Star Trek series for me. And so for those of you who are out there who feel the same way we do, this podcast is just for you. This is why we do it. So thank you very much for that review. But this isn't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
But instead of it being a human being prejudiced against Vulcans because the Romulans look like Vulcans, the Vulcans are taking advantage of themselves looking like Romulans in order to be racist against Romulans.
Earl Grey.
So he's got the 2 armrests, and the right one says little, you know, Ensign, you know, Lamont, and a little arrow. And then the one on the left says Lieutenant Commander Data. Like a little arrow. Yep.
The orb.
But when they pull away from that window with Jake and Kira, and they pull away from the station, it's like they're closing the book. They're actually closing the back cover of the book, and it's the end of the story.
To the journey! How do you feel, Char, about the Borg Queen?
Oh boy. I think the longer that I have watched Star Trek, the more I'm in the camp of, I don't know if I like her.
The Ready Room.
They want you to come across on Archer's side where he can be mad at Trip. But I have a really hard time being Archer being mad at Trip, because just think of if we still treated, you know, people of a different race like this.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
That can honestly be the reason they brought Wesley, because Wesley's got nothing else going for him there. I mean, yes, he can lead those kids, but that's just going to be by virtue of his age, right? I mean, he's 15 years old. Of course, all the other kids are going to look up to him, at least for a while. Then if he ends up being a total tool, then they won't.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Yeah, well, Learning Curve was never meant to be a season one finale. They were going to do the 37s, and then UPN wanted to open season 2 with it, and that totally didn't work either.
Man, you gotta say UPN really ooped it up.
Literary Treks.
What Jerry Taylor talks about with Catherine Janeway's life is it's kind of a series of her relationships. I mean, she should be doing all sorts of fantastic things, right? And instead, we're learning about her boyfriends.
Melodic Treks.
But there's a whole host of people that appear in Star Trek. As I said, most of it is classical, so it's Verdi, Vivaldi, Strauss, Troisky, Harry Kim.
The 602 Club.
This really does have an impact on, I think, the entire, you know, comic book world. Dark Knight, Dark Knight Returns still have a huge impact in the way that people view Batman today.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check us out on virtually any platform out there. And we've got any kind of Trek talk you could possibly want, whether it's independent productions or one of the shows, or whether it's behind the scenes stuff with commentary Trek stars, which I was on very recently with Mike, Max, and John. That was a lot of fun. I discussed Jerry Taylor, who, of course, was the showrunner for seasons 1 through 4-ish on Voyager. Or literary treks, too. I was recently on there with Chris and Matt talking Mosaic. Had a fantastic time. If you haven't checked those out, check them out. And of course, all of these shows are helped tremendously by the help of our sponsors, so let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Also, one more thing, you can help support us personally by becoming a member of Patreon and becoming a monthly subscriber. Your donation helps us do several things, many of which are going to massively improve the network, but if you're able to and you would like to become a monthly subscriber and help us out on Trek.fm, go to patreon.com/trekfm. It's patreon.com/trekfm, and we would massively appreciate any support that you can give us. All right, Tristan, number 100 is next week. It's finally here.
That's right, our 100th episode, and we're going to celebrate it in style, but we're not even going to tell you how we're going to do it.
No.
Because you're going to have to wait until next week to find out. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!